Chapter 27. Thought, indignantly. He saw in this promotion an intrigue, a conspiracy, a cowardly maneuver. That colonel knew what he was doing. He had hastened to recommend his favorite for a step. It was outrageous that a man should be able to avoid the consequences of his acts in such a dark and tortuous manner. Of a happy-go-lucky disposition, of a temperament more pugnacious than military, lewd. Ferrod had been content to give and receive blows for sheer love of armed strife, and without much thought of advancement, but now an urgent desire to get on sprang up in his breast. This fighter by vocation resolved in his mind to seize showy occasions, and to court the favorable opinion of his chiefs like a mere worldling. He knew he was as brave as anyone, and never doubted his personal charm. Nevertheless, neither the bravery nor the charm seemed to work very swiftly. Lute. Ferrod's engaging, careless truculence of a beau sabre underwent a change. He began to make bitter allusions to clever fellows who stick at nothing to get on. The army was full of them, he would say, you had only to look round. But all the time he had in view one person only, his adversary, Dubert. Once he confided to an appreciative friend, Colin, you see, I don't know how to fawn on the right sort of people. It isn't in my character. He did not get his step till a week after Austerlitz. The light cavalry of the Grand Army had its hands very full of interesting work for a little while. Directly the pressure of professional occupation had been eased, Captain Ferrod took measures to arrange a meeting without loss of time. I know my bird, he observed, grimly. If I don't look sharp, he will take care to get himself promoted over the heads of a dozen better men than himself. He's got the knack for that sort of thing. This duel was fought in Silesia. If not fought to a finish, it was, at any rate, fought to a standstill. The weapon was the cavalry saber, and the skill, the science, the vigor, and the determination displayed by the adversaries compelled the admiration of the beholders. It became the subject of talk on both shores of the Danube, and as far as the garrisons of Graz and Laibach. They crossed blades 7 times. Both had many cuts which bled profusely. Both refused to have the combat stopped, time after time, with what appeared the most deadly animosity. This appearance was caused on the part of Captain Dubert by a rational desire to be done once for all with this worry, on the part of Captain Ferrod by a tremendous exaltation of his pugnacious instincts, and the incitement of wounded vanity. At last, disheveled, their shirts in rags, covered with gore and hardly able to stand, they were led away forcibly by their marveling and horrified seconds. Later on, besieged by comrades avid of details, these gentlemen declared that they could not have allowed that sort of hacking to go on indefinitely. Asked whether the quarrel was settled this time, they gave it out as their conviction that it was a difference which could only be settled by one of the parties remaining lifeless on the ground. The sensation spread from army corps to army corps, and penetrated at last to the smallest detachments of the troops cantoned between the Rhine and the Save. In the cafes in Vienna it was generally estimated, from details to hand, that the adversaries would be able to meet again in 3 weeks' time on the outside. Something really transcendent in the way of dueling was expected. These expectations were brought to naught by the necessities of the service which separated the two officers. No official notice had been taken of their quarrel. It was now the property of the army, and not to be meddled with lightly. But the story of the duel, or rather their dueling propensities, must have stood somewhat in the way of their advancement, because they were still captains when they came together again during the war with Prussia. Detached north after Jena, with the army commanded by Marshal Bernadotte, Prince of Pontecorvo, they entered Lübeck together. It was only after the occupation of that town that Captain Ferrod found leisure to consider his future conduct in view of the fact that Captain Dubert had been given the position of third aide-de-camp to the Marshal. He considered it a great part of a night, and in the morning summoned two sympathetic friends. "I've been thinking it over calmly," he said, gazing at them with bloodshot, tired eyes. I see that I must get rid of that intriguing personage. Here he's managed to sneak onto the personal staff of the marshal. It's a direct provocation to me. I can't tolerate a situation in which I am exposed any day to receive an order through him. And God knows what order to. That sort of thing has happened once before, and that's once too often. He understands this perfectly, never fear. I can't tell you any more. Now you know what it is you have to do. This encounter took place outside the town of Lubeck, on very open ground, selected with special care in deference to the general sentiment of the cavalry division belonging to the Army Corps, that this time the two officers should meet on horseback. After all, this duel was a cavalry affair, and to persist in fighting on foot would look like a slight on one's own arm of the service. The seconds, startled by the unusual nature of the suggestion, hastened to refer to their principals. Captain Farrod jumped at it with alacrity. For some obscure reason, depending, no doubt, on his psychology, he imagined himself invincible on horseback. All alone within the four walls of his room, he rubbed his hands and muttered triumphantly, "Aha, my pretty staff officer, I've got you now." Captain Dubert on his side, after staring hard for a considerable time at his friends, shrugged his shoulders slightly. This affair had hopelessly and unreasonably complicated his existence for him. One absurdity more or less in the development did not matter, all absurdity was distasteful to him. But, urbane as ever, he produced a faintly ironical smile, and said in his calm voice, "It certainly will do away to some extent with the monotony of the thing." When left alone, he sat down at a table, and took his head into his hands. He had not spared himself of late, and the marshal had been working all his aides-de-camp particularly hard. The last 3 weeks of campaigning in horrible weather had affected his health. When overtired, he suffered from a stitch in his wounded side, and that uncomfortable sensation always depressed him. "It's that brute's doing too," he thought bitterly. The day before, he had received a letter from home, announcing that his only sister was going to be married. He reflected that from the time she was 19, and he 26, when he went away to garrison life in Strasbourg, he had had but two short glimpses of her. They had been great friends and confidants, and now she was going to be given away to a man whom he did not know, a very worthy fellow no doubt, but not half good enough for her. He would never see his old Leonie again. As he had a capable little head, and plenty of tact, she would know how to manage the fellow, to be sure. He was easy in his mind about her happiness, but he felt ousted from the first place in her thoughts which had been his ever since the girl could speak. A melancholy regret of the days of his childhood settled upon Captain Dubert, third aide-de-camp to the Prince of Pontecorvo. He threw aside the letter of congratulation he had begun to write as in duty bound, but without enthusiasm. He took a fresh piece of paper, and traced on it the words : "This is my last will and testament." Looking at these words, he gave himself up to unpleasant reflection. A presentiment that he would never see the scenes of his childhood weighed down the equable spirits of Captain Dubert. He jumped up, pushing his chair back, yawned elaborately in sign that he didn't care anything for presentiments, and throwing himself on the bed went to sleep. During the night he shivered from time to time without waking up. In the morning he rode out of town between his two seconds, talking of indifferent things, and looking right and left with apparent detachment into the heavy morning mists shrouding the flat green fields bordered by hedges. He leaped a ditch, and saw the forms of many mounted men moving in the fog. "We are to fight before a gallery, it seems," he muttered to himself, bitterly. His seconds were rather concerned at the state of the atmosphere, but presently a pale sickly sun struggled out of the low vapors, and Captain Dubert made out, in the distance, three horsemen riding a little apart from the others. It was Captain Farron and his seconds. He drew his saber and assured himself that it was properly fastened to his wrist. And now the seconds, who had been standing in close group with the heads of their horses together, separated at an easy canter, leaving a large, clear field between him and his adversary. Captain Dubert looked at the pale sun, at the dismal fields, and the imbecility of the impending fight filled him with desolation. From a distant part of the field a stentorian voice shouted commands at proper intervals. O paso trot charges! Presentiments of death don't come to a man for nothing, he thought at the very moment he put spurs to his horse. And therefore he was more than surprised when, at the very first set to, Captain Farron laid himself open to a cut over the forehead, which, blinding him with blood, ended the combat almost before it had fairly begun. It was impossible to go on. Captain Dubert, leaving his enemy swearing horribly and reeling in the saddle between his two appalled friends, leaped the ditch again into the road and trotted home with his two seconds, who seemed rather awestruck at the speedy issue of that encounter. In the evening Captain Dubert finished the congratulatory letter on his sister's marriage. He finished it late. It was a long letter. Captain Dubert gave reins to his fancy. He told his sister that he would feel rather lonely after this great change in her life, but then the day would come for him to get married. In fact, he was thinking already of the time when there would be no one left to fight with in Europe, and the epoch of wars would be over. I expect then, he wrote, to be within measurable distance of a marshal's baton, and you will be an experienced married woman. You shall look out a wife for me. I will be, probably, bald by then, and a little blasé. I shall require a young girl, pretty of course, and with a large fortune, which should help me to close my glorious career in the splendor befitting my exalted rank. He ended with the information that he had just given a lesson to a worrying, quarrelsome fellow who imagined he had a grievance against him. Be but if you, in the depths of your province, he continued, ever hear it said, that your brother is of a quarrelsome disposition, don't you believe it on any account. There is no saying what gossip from the army may reach your innocent ears. Whatever you hear, you may rest assured that your ever-loving brother is not a duelist. Then Captain Dubert crumpled up the blank sheet of paper headed with the words, "His is my last will and testament," and threw it in the fire with a great laugh at himself. He didn't care a snap for what that lunatic could do. He had suddenly acquired the conviction that his adversary was utterly powerless to affect his life in any sort of way, except, perhaps, in the way of putting a special excitement into the delightful, gay intervals between the campaigns. From this on there were, however, to be no peaceful intervals in the career of Captain Dubert. He saw the fields of Eylau and Friedland, marched and countermarched in the snow, in the mud, in the dust of Polish plains, picking up distinction and advancement on all the roads of northeastern Europe. Meantime, Captain Farron, dispatched southwards with his regiment, made unsatisfactory war in Spain. It was only when the preparations for the Russian campaign began that he was ordered north again. He left the country of mantillas and oranges without regret. The first signs of a not unbecoming baldness added to the lofty aspect of Colonel Dubert's forehead. This feature was no longer white and smooth as in the days of his youth. The kindly open glance of his blue eyes had grown a little hard, as if from much peering through the smoke of battles. The ebony crop on Colonel Farron's head, coarse and crinkly like a cap of horsehair, showed many silver threads about the temples. A detestable warfare of ambushes and inglorious surprises had not improved his temper. The beak-like curve of his nose was unpleasantly set off by a deep fold on each side of his mouth. The round orbits of his eyes radiated wrinkles. More than ever he recalled an irritable and staring bird, something like a cross between a parrot and an owl. He was still extremely outspoken in his dislike of intriguing fellows. He seized every opportunity to state that he did not pick up his rank in the anterooms of marshals. The unlucky persons, civil or military, who, with an intention of being pleasant, begged Colonel Ferrand to tell him how he came by that very apparent scar on the forehead, were astonished to find themselves snubbed in various ways, some of which were simply rude, and others mysteriously sardonic. Young officers were warned kindly by their more experienced comrades not to stare openly at the colonel's scar. But indeed an officer need have been very young in his profession not to have heard the legendary tale of that duel originating in a mysterious, unforgivable offense. 3. The retreat from Moscow submerged all private feelings in a sea of disaster and misery. Colonels without regiments, Dubert and Ferrand carried the musket in the ranks of the so-called Sacred Battalion, a battalion recruited from officers of all arms who had no longer any troops to lead. And that battalion promoted colonels did duty as sergeants. The generals captained the companies. A marshal of France, Prince of the Empire, commanded the whole. All had provided themselves with muskets picked up on the road, and with cartridges taken from the dead. And the general destruction of the bonds of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.